This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Labor unions had until last Friday to decide if they were going to recertify with the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission and remain recognized unions. It's unclear how many did not go through the process, since no one keeps track of how many labor unions are in the state. Many labor unions did not have to go through that process this year, since they were in the middle of labor contracts when collective bargaining changes suggested by Governor Scott Walker took effect. Coulee Region United Educators represents 56 teacher and support staff unions for area school districts. Of the 8 unions that had to make a decision to recertify, 3 of them chose not to. Jerry Rathel is the director for CREW. I asked him to talk about the process of union recertification.
We have 56 contracts. 32 of them virtually had no elections. The 24, in most cases, had one election. And that's really been sort of the standard fare for how this has worked. Clearly, the opportunity to select or deselect a union was left with local employees of that school district. Now that we're operating under Act 10 and how that's all changed in terms of recertification, a couple of huge hurdles have been placed into the roadway. The first of which is it requires us to recertify as a representative for our members.
And that deadline occurred last Friday.
For those school districts and employee unions that didn't have a contract or didn't have an extension, last Friday was the deadline for filing petitions for that recertification election. One of the other significant differences and another hurdle, if you will, in our pathway is that under the old rules, when there was a petition filed to have an election, it was very similar to our elections when we elect public officials. Whoever it is that's on the ballot essentially needs to get one more vote than anyone else. Majority rules. The new rules that we are now dealing with requires us to get 51% of all eligible voters. The school district I work in are small rural schools, so a 60 teacher unit is pretty big for where I normally am. So if we take a 60 teacher local, 30 would be half. So 31 people have to vote for representation. If we petition for an election and let's say 30 people return their ballot to say, yes, I want CREW, I want WEAC, I want NEA to be my representative, we've lost that election. Even if nobody voted no, part of the new rules is we need to have 51% of the eligible. So again, it's a hurdle. It's a significant hurdle.
And one of the other new rules that I understand is that. And I'm not sure if it's the union itself or if it's CREW or if it's WEAC, but you all have to pay for elections now. I saw a couple different figures thrown out there.
Right.
But is that different than what happened in the past?
When we filed a petition for an election in the past, essentially it was a service of the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission. Now there are fees attached to that. Each petition that we sent in had to have a check attached to the application that size of the check would be predicated on the size of the local. So in places where there's 1 to 99 employees, which is probably the bulk of the CREW locals, there's a $200 fee to have that election. When you go between 100 and 250, I think the fee was 350. The La Crosse Education Association, which is one of our locals, one of our affiliates, I think the fee that they're going to have to pay next year when their contract runs out, I think is 750. The Milwaukee schools, which has north of 5,000 employees, I think their filing fee is $3,500. So it's an amount of money. It's for some places it can be burdensome. I mean, we have a bargaining unit of 7 bus drivers in the Kickapoo bus driver or working for the Kickapoo school district. 7 employees and the fee is $200. So I question whether that's a requirement in terms of legally or if it's just one of those political hurdles that are placed in our way. And then compounding all of that is that these are annual. I mean, it isn't a matter of recertifying this year and then we can wait a couple years. We have to recertify every year.
And where does that money go then?
My presumption is it's sent to the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission, and so it's part of their operating expenses because they will essentially be monitoring and doing the election. So I would assume that that's where it'll stay.
So last Friday was the deadline for unions who did not have contracts together, correct?
Correct.
To seek recertification for their unions. Out of your 56 affiliates within the Cooley Region United Educators, how many of those did seek recertification?
We had either contracts or contract extensions in all but eight of those school districts. So I should say in all but eight local associations. For example, both the Aliva teachers and the Aliva Strum teachers and the Aliva Strum support staff obviously work for the same employer, but that's two of the contracts out of the eight that we weren't able to get extensions on. So we have eight places, if you will, eight contracts where we had local conversations around should we attempt to recertify. Should we not? Is it worth it? What are the problems, hurdles? What are the advantages? And we had eight conversations about should we do this or should we not? And the answer in those eight places essentially is five places we have decided to recertify, and in three places we have not. That doesn't mean that we don't have members. That doesn't mean we're not servicing folks, that we're not helping our members in those places, but it does mean that the local association will not be a certified representative. And under the new rules, the single issue that we can bargain over is base wages. Up to the cost of living. So where we are coming off an era where we bargained over insurance, wages, work rules, all, pretty broad spectrum of rules governing employment, we're now being relegated to bargaining over just base wages. And in three conversations, we decided it wasn't worth it.
And what were those three?
Both Aliva Strum units decided not to, as did the Bangor support staff. Those three were the places where we decided not to.
And was money an issue? Or?
It was part of the conversation, yes.
The units that did decide to recertify, and obviously looking a year from now, everyone will have to recertify again. Is that correct?
Not quite.
Okay.
As you said, we have 56 units, 56 bargaining groups. For example, the Royal support staff had a three-year agreement that doesn't end until 2013. So they won't have to. They already have a contract. Okay. We have extensions in most of our school districts. We got one-year extensions, which will end June 30 of 2012. But we did get some contract extensions of 2 years in duration. So, and I think we have five of those. So of the 56, six of them will have contracts through 12-13. So eight, 42 more coming open, and then the final six.
So once a union has to go through the recertification process, and since you all can only negotiate over wages, why is it important to go through the recertification process?
I think part of the value is political, in that it's a statement by our members to Governor Walker and other politicians that we are still alive, we are still an entity, we are still concerned about our members, concerned about the children that they work with and the families that they work for, and more of a we're still here, we're still an entity that needs to be addressed and dealt with, and maintaining as much of our bargaining rights as we can, as much as we can under the law. I mean, if you go back to the old law, there were certain things that were simply the purview of management. There were certain things that, we would like to talk about, we would like to have bargained over, but the law essentially said, no, that is really a managerial issue, okay? One of the goofy parts of the old law was the class size was a managerial issue. mean, I got to believe that it matters whether there's 30 children in a classroom or 15 children in a classroom. And certainly that's creates a better learning environment, the smaller numbers. But again, it was one of those determinations by the labor board that that's a managerial issue. They get to decide that, and you can't bargain over that. And so there were, like now, there were issues that we would have liked to talk about. We did talk about. I mean, we had our oar in the water. We provided our input. And you know, in many cases, the employer said, oh, that does make some sense. And we intend to do that moving forward. I mean, we, again, have standing to bargain over base wages, but we intend to move forward with continued conversations around the rest of the work rules. I mean, we have some wonderful examples in other places of the state of some really bad work rules. I mean, I'm hearing rumors around establishing the workday for teachers to start at 6:30 in the morning and end at 6 at night. Really? I mean, good gravy. Okay, beyond that, there has to be some lesson plans still prepared, some papers corrected, and I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. And we're going to continue to explain that to school boards, to administrators, that, you know, if you're talking about and thinking about a rule that doesn't make sense, we're going to say that. Okay, we'll say it politely, but we're going to say that rule, that new found power that you have, that it makes sense to do that, because that's not going to be good for our members, the employees of the district, also probably not going to be good for kids. And that's should be the central component of decision making for school boards. I mean, yes, they're there reflecting the taxpayers, but they're also there trying to deliver the best education possible for the children that live in the district and the families that are in the district.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guest today is Jerry Rathel. He is the executive director of the Cooley Region United Educators, which represents 56 different affiliates within the Western Wisconsin area. Since this law passed, since collective bargaining was restricted for most public workers, and as you represent unions that are affiliated with schools. What's the relationship been like between the unions and the school administration?
The status quo has obviously been modified. And in some places, the status quo in terms of working together, discussing, having good, deep conversations about what's good for education, what's good for children, for families, continues. I mean, we still have good relationships with a number of school districts. The reality is there are some places where that conversation is deteriorating,
as of this year, or has that been
In some of those places where we haven't been able to get extensions, that conversation is strained, and that's unfortunate. The power shift, if you will, has clearly flipped to the employer, to the administration, to the school board, and sometimes they are taking advantage of that, and that's just not playing out very well. My hope, my expectation is that most places will continue to talk. I mean, we will not bargain, okay, but we will talk because we think we're, you know, our members are on the front line of what's going on. They have a pretty good handle on what's going on, what'll work, and what makes sense. And generally, we're not too bashful about explaining that. And you know, candidly, a lot of that conversation explanation happened across a bargaining table. And we expect that we will still be sitting across a table. We won't be bargaining per se, but we will meet and confer. Ultimately, the employer has a lot more power, a lot more authority. We get that, okay? But we still are going to have our input. We're going to have our opportunity to say, have you really thought about how the ramifications of that, what that might mean in terms of how we have to deal with the rest of this? As I said, Bangor support staff is one of those places where we didn't get a contract extension, and they're in the process of building a policy manual to deal with work rules for those folks. And candidly, a lot of that policy looks like the collective bargaining agreement that we used to have. And that's a good thing, I think, because in the process of creating that that collective bargaining agreement, there were conversations, sometimes arguments, between the board and the association about what made sense, what would work, what could happen. So a lot of that, the collective bargaining agreement, the product of that, was via conversation, sometimes difficult, hard conversations. And so it really doesn't surprise me that a lot of that would still be there, because it made sense then, it makes sense now. Now, there's parts that have changed, obviously. When it comes to layoff and reductions, the number one issue in the contract was seniority. It's not number one anymore. It's now number three. I understand. I get that. I don't think that's right, but I get it. I understand that they're grabbing some of the power now that they can do. We'll talk about that further.
It may be too early to determine this yet, but one of the reasons that the governor wanted to change collective bargaining rules was because Governor Walker said that it could save school districts money in the long run. Have you been able to see whether or not some of the schools within the Cooley region have actually saved money yet, or is it too early to tell?
Generally speaking, this biennial budget significantly reduced the amount of aides that are coming to school districts to the tune of almost $400 million. When you add in some of the categorical, it's over $400 million. That same number is also going to be a reduction for next year, for 12-13, for that school year. In the face of that dramatic of a reduction of aid from the state to local municipalities, local school districts, I mean, this is not a K-12 issue. This is a public sector issue, because the counties and towns and everybody is similarly situated. What's happened in terms of the 11-12 school year is that two significant moving parts, if you will, occurred, and that is virtually all K-12 employees are paying half of their pension. There's a few exceptions where there were contracts that were already in place before February 11th. That isn't occurring there, but that's a clear small minority. So employees now are paying half their pension, and employees are paying 12% of their health insurance. Now, for many of our members who are already paying 10%, there was a little, not a lot, okay? But we still had a few contracts that had the employer paying the entire premium. So going from zero to 12% of a family plan was a big savings. And when we go back to that $400 million cut in aid to the school districts, the vast majority of that money is essentially coming out of our members' paychecks, by paying half the pension and paying the health insurance. Now, it's not a check cut, but their checks are smaller. I mean, no, at this point, I don't think anybody has taken a pay cut, but their checks are smaller, because half the pension and half of the insurance is now being deducted, because in those places where we got contract extensions, in the face of the conversation going on in Madison around Act 10, we took the position that if it's money that is this problem, we can solve that. You don't need to take away collective bargaining to solve that problem. Here's our offer. And we got those agreements in that context. I don't think that was really Governor Walker's agenda. I think his agenda was to harm public sector unions, to reduce their influence, and hopefully just drive them out of existence. So, going back to one of my earlier comments about why recertify, part of it is a statement to him to say, we're still here. We're still viable. We're going to continue to do the work that we do.
So a couple months into this law, besides the recertification and the fact that dues can no longer come out of teachers' checks, are there any other impacts that this has had on the employees that you represent?
The issue of uncertainty, at least early on, was incredibly straining. Okay, I mean, you're talking about, I guess our members would range in age from 22 to in their 70s, okay? And most of them had been with their employers for extended periods of time. I have a teacher in one of the districts I work with who's finishing her 50th year of employment, okay? And during that entire time, she understood the working relationship, how the contract worked, what she was going to get for pay and benefits. And so early on, that was just in the wind in terms of what's going to happen. And I think employers that got contract extensions with their unions really bought themselves some time to let the dust settle, to sort of help sort this out. Because in those places where we have contracts expiring in June of 2012, we've got a year to work on the policy book together. We've got some time to sort all of this out. We have 8 contracts that didn't get extensions, and they're in some turmoil in terms of figuring that out. I mean, most school districts didn't know that that was actually going to be the law of the land until late June. You know, and the contract expired June 30th, and now July 1 has come, and we don't really have work rules yet. And, in fact, there's some places where we're on a first reading of those work rules, and we're, you know, a quarter of the way into the year. Well, not a quarter, but a chunk into the year. And so it's an interesting time we live in.
What sort of long-term impacts will these changes have on the school districts?
My greatest fear is one of the stable components of most school districts is a staff, both professional and non-professional, that comes to work and stays. They come to a small rural school district as a 23-year-old teacher and retire, you know, 40 years later. I think there's great value in knowing families and knowing the system and knowing the school district and knowing what's expected. I'm not sure how stable all of these relationships are going to be. That really concerns me. I have 3 grandchildren in the Lafarge School District. I worry because I want for them to have great teachers who are in Lafarge, you know, and have been in Lafarge a while and know my grandchildren and know their family. I worry. I worry about how fluid all of this is going to be.
Jerry Rathel is director for the Cooley Region United Educators, which works with 56 teacher and support staff unions of area schools. We were talking about the issue of union recertification in the state. Coming up in the next half hour, the No Impact Man, who lived for a year in New York City off the grid, creating no garbage and buying nothing but locally grown food. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.